Auckland Grey Power is pleased to sponsor this edition of Senior Focus. Warm welcome to you all and to our listeners today who joined, whether it's for the first time or you've listened to many programs. We're delighted to have you on board, and it's that warmer time of the year. We're coming into spring, not quite there yet, so it's a bit up and down and the body's a bit tired adjusting to all these different temperatures. But it's a great time to think about getting out and making new connections with people. There's a lot of activities going on in the community. In Blockhouse Bay, where Grey Power has its office these days, there's a market day twice in the month, so the second and the fourth Saturdays, from 7:30 till midday, and there's really good produce and great plants and things available there. And of course, we're out in force with our clipboards out meeting people and greeting people. Now, we've got suffrage day coming up on the 19th of September, and for those who want to acknowledge the 125th anniversary of women getting the vote in New Zealand, we can gather at 7 o'clock at Aotea Square, because it's going to be a large event there. And then later on at 10 o'clock at Alan Melville Hall, down at Freiburg Place, down in, near High Street there, there's going to be another morning tea with Helen Clark in the Helen Clark room, I believe. So that's going to be worthwhile attending. They're all open to the public, those events. Now, the 5th of October, which is a Friday at 1 o'clock, in the Blockhouse Bay Senior Citizens Hall in Blockhouse Bay Rye, just before the roundabout, next to the community centre, that's where Grey Power is having its monthly meeting. And at that monthly meeting, we're looking forward to unveiling a presentation around the future of senior-friendly, age-friendly housing, and from the point of view of accessibility. Just imagine all the advantages you can have if you design something that suits everybody across the lifespan from the word go. So when you try to remediate something later on, when someone's in a wheelchair, it's very much more expensive. So that'll be a really interesting presentation, and we'll have some interesting people coming along, like we hope to have the Minister for Building and Construction there, Jenny Celestia. So that'll be interesting. As well, it's heritage time, and there is the Heritage Festival and many, many activities, and there's a whole booklet full, jam-packed full of things you can go to. A lot of them are free, and the booklets are in the library, so do look out for these and do try and get to some things. They're great to take your grandkids to, because they give you an opportunity to open up and talk about things that you remember and how Auckland was very different back in the day. So today, we know that it's very important to connect with people, that social isolation is a killer. More people suffer and ill health and die earlier when they don't connect, when they don't have significant people in their community that they can chat to. It can be quite a casual process. It doesn't have to be a serious, serious relationship. It just, the opportunity to bump into people and have a chat is a very important part of being well and healthy and aging well. So in Australia, the Men's Shed movement was set up as a support system, as a mental health initiative to support men. And they're having the Men's Shed Week on the 23rd to the 30th of September. So it seemed like a very timely thing to contact men who are at our community shed in central Auckland and have a chat with them about setting up of their shed and the things that they do there, who they are and what makes that shed tick. So welcome Patrick and Ken. It's really good to have you on the program.
And thanks, Anne-Marie.
It was great to drop in the other day and listen to all those tools grinding and whizzing away and seeing people so industriously connected to these tools, absolutely passionately making things for themselves and for their friends and community. So it was great to see it in action. And what I'd like to do is just get a little bit of background from each of you on how you came to the shed and what's brought you to the shed, what you feel it means in your life and what you were doing before you came to the shed. So I'll start with you, Patrick.
Okay, so as I was approaching retirement, I was kind of looking to fill my life, you know, looking for things to connect with and things to do, spend my time. And I'd heard about the shed as a movement, and I looked for my local shed. Well, that didn't exist. There wasn't a local shed. The closest, I live in Avondale, the closest one to me was in Henderson. So I then connected with somebody who was wanting to start one centrally, and then we started looking, talking to council and looking for a premises for that. And so that was about 2.5 years ago. So really, we've been, you know, up and running now for a couple of years. And yeah, for me, I kind of looked around and looked at my tired old tools and thought, well, you know, time to upgrade some of these, and there's great stuff out there that you can buy. And I thought, well, it'd be great to actually be involved in something, a community-based thing, when you could have all these machinery, this tools and machinery, and other people could use them as well. And so, yep, that's how it, and always been a keen DIY person. You know, I had my own house, a couple of houses over the years, and had to do the repairs and so on. So although I come from more of a social working background, I always would turn my hand to, saws and machinery and fixing things up. And it's been great to have people at the shed to share ideas with, to get ideas about, you know, how to do things. And there's a huge amount of experience in the shed, and it's been great. It's been great to be part of that.
Mm, cool. And Ken, what's brought you to the shed? I'm really curious.
I've been a lifetime aero modeler, model builder. Always did things with my hands. Over the years, we renovated a couple of old houses, and mind you, the last one we lived in for 40 years. So moving out of there was quite a major operation, and we ended up kind of in limbo for 6 months between houses, living in a little one-bedroom flat temporarily. And around about then, I got involved with Patrick and the other guys with the shed at Gribblehurst Park. And I was able to spend almost all day and every day there doing things. We put up shelving and racking and benches and stuff. I think I would have gone crazy if I'd had to stay home in this little flat all day with nothing to do. And as I say, always been a bit of a home handyman. Always fix things rather than throw them away. And, the shed's got tools and machinery that I can't possibly have at home. And it's a great place to meet all these other guys that are with similar interests. And the morning tea times tend to stretch to quite long times sometimes, with discussion and arguments about all manner of things.
I can imagine. I was quite impressed with the size and the layout and the fact that you had quite a good area to sit down and have a cup of tea or, you know, coffee, and there was plenty of room for people to spread out. So when you found this place, I understood it was not very well maintained, and
that's right, yeah.
And I wondered, whether that's been a bit of a journey for you guys, whether you've been home handyman fixing your own place up first, before you could be fully operational, or how did things work out?
Yeah, you're right. The place had been empty for some time, and council had done some remedial work prior to us moving in there, and that was in the main woodworking area. But then we had to make the, because it was a social space for the bowling club prior to that, which had been a very popular bowling club in its day. But, you know, it was suffering from, you know, years of neglect and still does. There's only part of it that we've managed to get fixed up through council. But then, as I say, we had to, there was still the bar there when we moved in, so we had to rip that out and we had to, you know, make it fit for the use that we have now. But there's still, we have to suffer some, especially with heavy rain, some leaks in parts of the building, and we've had to have rewiring done and so on like that, which is an ongoing thing with the dialogue with council. We're relatively happy with the way that's been going. We never expected to get it done overnight. So we're getting there. It's part of a journey and it's part of the work that we do there, you know.
I'm just thinking about this shed is in Gribblehurst Park. So for people listening who don't know Gribblehurst Park, it's in Sandringham. Would you like to explain, Ken, how people can find it?
Well, Gribblehurst Park's on Sandringham Road, not far from Eden Park. There's actually a road runs through the middle of Gribblehurst Park and comes out over on the Araha Street over the back towards kind of the back of the St. Luke's Shopping Centre. It's a little bit devious to find the place we're in because we're tucked away around behind the rugby club and people do have a bit of trouble finding us at times. We're putting out a few signs of our own, hanging on the trees and so forth, pointing to the shed, which seems to help. And we have our issues occasionally. We're open on Saturdays and through the winter there are children's football games on, and crowds of people, and parking becomes a bit of an issue. But we manage to coexist quite well, and becoming quite popular.
When I drove up the lane, I'd call it, not really a road, it's not that wide.
Cabbage Tree Swamp Drive.
Yes, what an apt name.
Yeah.
When I came up that drive, I found there was some large piles of sand, but I saw the rugby club and I thought there was what used to be the bowling green, and so I kind of used my common sense and went behind the rugby club to find the notices about the shed. So it wasn't that hard. But it's great to be near a bus stop. So if I was actually catching any of the buses that go through Sandringham, the 24B or whatnot, they're on their way to town, it's a very convenient place to get off and walk in if you're wanting to explore it. So you open Mondays, Wednesdays and Saturdays from 10 till 3.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm interested to know how people join and what sort of people get involved. So,
well, we're a little unusual as sheds go, because we do seem to have quite a lot of members who are still working, which means that a lot of them, we only see them on a Saturday because they have to work the rest of the time. We do have plans, if we can rouse enough volunteers, to open at least one evening during the week, partly to cater for these younger people who still have to work. But a good proportion of our members are older. And Mondays and Wednesdays have been pretty busy lately. And, a number of people who come, I'm sure, are only coming for the social activities, if you like, rather than actually doing things. As you said before, I think there's a growing number of people who are a little bit isolated. Perhaps a partner's gone and they're living on their own or whatever. And the shed's a good place to come and meet up with a whole lot of other people. We are actually a little different too to other sheds in that we are the Auckland Central Community Shed, not strictly a men's shed. And we do have a number of ladies who girls who are coming along.
About a dozen women.
Doing their own thing. They're with some help. Some of them need more help than others, but yeah, surprising the scope of some of the jobs that they take on.
Mm, that's very interesting. Maybe we'll have one or two of them in and interview them in a future program. I know myself, I did a lot of stuff when I was younger. I restored a heritage house and I burnt lead paint about 13 layers off the outside and sanded these mattai boards back so it was all like new.
Yeah.
It'll probably last another 150 years.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a 1904 cottage with a lot of tracery and fretwork all around the brand. Isn't that very beautiful? A labour of love indeed. So I don't live in it anymore, but you know, it's one of those things. Once you've done something like that, you have a lot of respect for people who work with tools, work with their hands, and work on projects, you know, particularly long-term projects, because it takes commitment. So, and then on the other hand, when I was there, I was seeing objects that people had made. I was seeing trays and bowls and bookshelving and, you know, all kinds of odds and ends. And some had price tags on. And so I wondered, Patrick, do people sometimes make stuff for sale or how does it work?
Yeah, I think often people come to the shed and they don't really know what to do exactly, how to start out. So we've got a kind of a gallery there, if you like, with some ideas that of where people can start. And it means that they can pick up materials even that we have at the shed. They can start using the machinery and they can start to get to know their way around the shed and with all the different processes. So, you know, making a tray or a lazy Susan or a stand for a recipe book or something that you could use on a computer as well. So fairly simple things. And then so we have a collection of that, and so people can buy those if they wish as well. As well as, the, you know, having a new wood-turning lathe, people have been really keen to have a go, really. Mm. And it's beyond often what people need themselves. And we can certainly sell those. And that all goes back, all that money just doesn't go back to the individual members. It goes back into the coffers of the shed so we can buy glues and screws and replace machinery and so on. Yeah.
Mm. Indeed, because it's not cheap to keep an operation like that going, I wouldn't imagine. So you have an annual membership fee, and yeah, would you like to talk about that and how you settled on the amount? And yeah,
well, we settled on $100 a year as a membership fee, which helps to cover the costs. We're always seem to be replacing things like saw blades that get damaged, or certainly the sanding belts and disc sanders and so forth, constantly need supplies to replace the worn out ones. Apart from the personal projects that people come in and do their own thing, we've also done a number of community projects as fundraisers. Early last year, we did a big job for the Auckland Council for a portable dance floor, which involved something like 50 sheets of plywood that we had to put, you know, arrange them to be bolted together so they could be taken apart and reassembled on another site. And that was quite a good money earner for the organisation. And there's been a number of other things we've done. We renovated an old Finn class yacht that belonged to a family, sort of family heirloom, I guess. Been hanging up in the shed for 20 years and one corner had gone a bit rotten. And a couple of our guys with that kind of experience worked away at it and cleaned it all up. And we got a healthy donation for doing the job.
Mm.
And there's been a number of little things like that. We've done a couple of jobs for, I think there was a school somewhere in Greyland that had a problem. They tried to get a tradesman to put a latch on the gate that adults could operate but children couldn't, and they couldn't find anyone to do it. So a couple of our guys went and had a look and came up with a scheme and made something for them. So.
Well, it's very exciting, your connection with the community. And I'm just wondering, in terms of volunteers and volunteering, I mean, everyone comes in wanting to do things and they're motivated about what they want to do, but you still need some kind of volunteer base to keep the place open, to keep everything ticking over. You need a treasurer, no doubt. You need a secretary. You need people to do publicity and people to do posters and design and communicate out your messages and so on. And I see that you've got a website, AucklandCentralShed.org.nz.
That's right.
So would you like to talk about maintaining yourselves in terms of your volunteer energy and interest and, you know, how you work on that? Because I think that is a real big challenge for most not-for-profit organisations.
It is, and it is certainly a challenge for us. And yeah, because the majority of our members are still working, so we are needing, really, in a way, more retired people that do have the time and that can help with that, the kind of infrastructure, if you like, to do all these particular things, because it does tend to fall on just a very small group of people. And well, we don't want to burn them out either, you know, and for them to lose interest. So we have done so many of those things ourselves in that small group, and we've been talking about it just recently, actually, of how we're going to get those more retired people to get involved, really.
I found from, you know, other experience apart from the shed, that it is becoming more and more difficult to get people to volunteer, to take on management positions in clubs. A lot of people have a bit of a fear of the liabilities involved. Mm. If what happens if something goes wrong, am I going to be in trouble? And that's making it difficult to get people to take on jobs like that.
I think actually you're right. I think that's one of the things that you know, is part of the changing landscape socially that we're facing. But by the same token, we've also got people who've got busy lives. They are looking after their grandchildren more. Mm. They are more involved in earning money on the side because they need extra money. Mm. They can't just use the pension and a bit of savings to get by because things happen and they cost too much. Repairs are expensive on the house or the car or whatever, and so that tends to drive people into looking for an extra bob or two and an extra job. We know from talking to people in Grey Power how many of them are working, how many people can't come to a committee meeting, how many people we have to have as backups to supply, service the monthly meeting, just make sure there's people to put the furniture out and do the hospitality, because we can't rely on them being there all the time. Because inevitably, if children are needing somebody and the parents are working, it's the grandparents that step in.
So that is a
common theme throughout the not-for-profit sector, but it's particularly true where there's a heavy reliance on seniors to do the volunteering. So having a website is one way to communicate. Have you thought about using Facebook at all? Because that seems to have a 50% of Facebook users are between 35 and 60, and quite often those people have got, they may not have more time, but they've got a certain amount of energy that they can do a just-on-time volunteering slot.
Haven't really been involved with things like Facebook personally.
But it's one option that we're actually looking at the moment. Yeah. We've noticed that since we've had that page, we've got more communication coming in. But also we noticed having an office in the shopping centre where people can drop in on their, when they're shopping and when they're going to the library and have a chat. We've noticed that's had an impact on the number of people volunteering for us. So maybe we can do some putting up a poster or two in our office and, you know, help drive a bit of traffic your way. I was thinking of one or two men who used to belong to a computer club which closed down, and they didn't actually learn much about computers. They actually went there to talk. So I was just thinking, well, maybe I could send them along to experientially comment and come back to our committee and tell us what they found. Yeah. I won't tell them what I know. And just send them along and just see what happens. No, I do think word of mouth is terribly important, and the more people who know about your shed, the more people know what goes on there, the more people who just notice somebody going downhill, notice somebody who's no longer as sparky as they used to be, who just notice somebody who's struggling a bit because they're working through living on their own or whatever, and they could point them.
Chap come in a couple of weeks ago who was sent by his GP, actually. But unfortunately, we haven't seen him back again. And, I mean, every time we're open, we probably do a bit of a tour through the shed, which takes about half an hour, really, to do it properly. And, you know, so many people actually come and look through the shed and just don't actually come back again. So I don't know why exactly. I mean, we were just talking about it just before coming in here, Ken and I, about why that is. And I suppose to some extent it's about, you know, coming into an unknown environment and sort of considering, well, how am I going to fit in here? But then that's the same with anything. You know, it takes time. You come, and we say to people, well, you can just come and come when we sort of sit around and we have our coffee breaks, tea breaks, and we try and put the world to rights. And there's some really good conversations, and it's good banter that goes on.
Patrick was in Hawke's Bay recently and went to visit the Hawke's Bay men's shed. And he said, oh, it was quite busy. There were maybe 20 people there, and half of them were in the lunchroom all the whole time I was there.
Yes, I think you don't have to have an excuse to connect, to talk, because it's just a natural process, and it's really good. This is what used to happen in the old days when the workplaces were more relaxed. We in New Zealand work far too hard.
Yes, definitely.
And one of the statistics that is quite shocking is what happens to men when they retire, when they actually officially exit out of their paid work, and they find, it's really difficult to adjust. It's too sudden, and the transition requires a lot of emotional energy and a lot of self-confidence, and people sometimes lack that. So the statistics are not encouraging. I mean, men are either sick, dead, or divorced, they tell me, 6 months later if they haven't found something else to do.
I was quite fearful, really, when I was approaching retirement, thought, what am I going to do with myself? And I started to talk to people that were retired to find out, you know, what did they come up with? And really, I was told to sort of start thinking about, before you retire, hobbies and interests, and start developing those now, and then you can actually spend more time doing those when you're retired. But don't go cold turkey sort of thing. Don't work right to the end and then start looking for something to do. It just doesn't work very well that way.
Indeed, and I have interviewed people around this very topic and have talked on some of the findings that we found from the research. And it's very important that people learn how to age well and they plan for it.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen by accident.
Yeah.
If you're going to age well, you have to design it yourself.
Yeah.
And looking after yourself and taking care of yourself in this community of the shed actually embodies all of that. So thank you both for coming in today.
Okay, thank you,
Anne-Marie. Okay, good to be here.
Get together with Senior Focus next Sunday at 5:25 p.m. on Planet FM 104.6, or listen online at any time at planetaudio.org.nz/Senior Focus, and do note, Senior Focus is one word.